Welcome to Blakey's Boot Room, the number one Cardiff City podcast, brought to you by Wales Online.
Hello and welcome to Blakey's Boot Room podcast, brought to you by Wales Online and in association with Giovanni's. There's a win and a defeat for Cardiff City for us to discuss today. I'm Dominic Booth, joined as always by Nathan Blake.
Good afternoon, my friend.
And Ian Mitchell-Moore standing in.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Nice to have you both.
Yeah,
nice to have a bit of a change.
Yeah. Someone who speaks sense for a change.
Is this episode going to be called The Good, The Bad and The Ugly then? Because I feel like that's what the last two games have been for Cardiff City.
Okay.
From the high of beating Wolves on Friday night to the London Stadium last night, which is a bit eerie anyway, but it did feel a little bit flat, Nathan, and Cardiff almost threw it away in a couple of key moments in the game.
I've only seen the highlights of the game, but I always say the start is so important, or the first goal is. So if I was to reflect on last night's game, I'm not going to say it's anyone's fault, but I would say you have to take that penalty chance.
Yeah.
Right? Because that alters the mind frame, the mindset of everybody. You know what I mean? I think when you get opportunities like that, and I noticed Neil after the game was, you know, quite blasé about it, but he'll be knowing deep down, he's probably saying that that way just to keep everybody, you know, calm and onside and what have you. But opportunities like that, they don't come along very often, and you know there's no other way than to say you've got to take that opportunity from the penalty spot. You still might go on to lose the game, but what you do is give yourself a better opportunity of getting something out of the game, I think, if you take that penalty. So all in all, look, it was, you know, you wouldn't say it was a great performance, but then I don't think the performance against Wolves was great. The result was fantastic and was probably the only thing that mattered. But you wouldn't say in the last two games that Cardiff have played well. They've almost gone back to where they were at the start of the season when it comes to playing wise and retention of ball and passing. Like I thought against Wolves and last night, very sloppy. Give the ball away too often. They're not keeping possession of the ball.
There was only really that spell in the West Ham game where sort of 10-15 minutes it looked like they've started here, and Gunnarsson was getting on the ball and then the penalty came, and like you said, they had to capitalise on that moment to grow into the game, because you felt like West Ham were using that as motivation as soon as the save went.
Well, as soon as the save happens, it's like scoring a goal, and the London Stadium then takes off.
Yeah,
it's no different to when we equalise against Wolves. I said on radio, if we equalise, we'll win the game, no problem, because what happened is the crowd is engaged already, right? And against Wolves, they were having to hold back their singing once they went 1-0 down. But you knew if Wolves score a second, then they'll probably quieten the place. But if we get it, then, you know, this crowd is going to engage back and they're going to drive the team. You've literally seen it, drive the team to another goal and over the line.
Ian, was there a difference in resilience that Cardiff showed in these two games? Because against West Ham, something goes against them, they miss a penalty and then they crumble in 12 minutes after half time. In the Wolves game, they fought back, having conceded that first goal, as they've often done this season. It seemed to be the character wasn't there at the London Stadium, was it?
I'm not sure I'd entirely agree with that. I mean, yes, on the reflection it does look like that, because they've gone and conceded three goals in the space of, what, 15 minutes was it? But They were mistakes. I don't think it was an issue more of resilience, because they've shown that with, you know, they've had three wins this season and they've come from behind in all three. So I don't really think you can question the mentality or the resilience of the squad. But
concentration, maybe? Or?
Well, that's absolutely one of them. And, you know, like you say, whose responsibility was it to clear that first one? Was it Sean Morrison or was it Joe Bennett? You know, between the two of them, they messed up and gifted West Ham the opener, probably against the run of play at that point in the game as well. And I think Nathan touched on it there, really, when West Ham were much the better side in the first probably 30-35 minutes. Cardiff just started to get into the game, and all of a sudden they get a penalty out of nowhere, and that's, you know, they go 1-0 up, and it's all ifs, buts and maybes as always, but that totally changes everything. And all of a sudden, just as Cardiff had a chance to start making an impact on the game as they were growing into it, it's gone straight away.
It's brutal in the Premier League. You don't get another one.
They're finding that out so often, and there's only so many times where you can rely on this team spirit and resilience to get you in these positions where you go behind and come back to get a point or a win, because you can't keep doing it.
You might get six or seven games that you'll win like that in a season, but over the course of a season, you know, that you cannot be relying upon determination, spirit and, you know, character, which they've been showing in abundance. But I think between, you know, after I would say probably Huddersfield, Newcastle, they did start we've discussed it on here many times. They did start to retain the ball better. They did start to mix their game up a bit. They did start to create chances. A couple of the goals they had scored were, you know, 7, 8, 9 passes with a tap in on the end of it. So I was starting to believe that they had to mix their game up. And I still believe they have to mix their game up, because you look at someone like the game against Wolves, and I'm referring to Wolves because I've seen and watched it live. Someone like Bowley, I thought he was outstanding for Wolves. I thought he should be at Man United or Real Madrid. He looked unbelievable. And what it done was totally then took away the Patterson hold up flick on. Right?
Yeah.
So if you can't hold up and flick on, then I always say you need to move him. You need to shift him. Well, Patterson's he's not going to run in behind. He's not, as I said before, I'm not a natural striker. Right? So once Bowley took away his flick on ability and was, you know, up against him and battling and beating him in the air, quite frankly, for most of the game, Cardiff have to then find a different platform to play off. You can't just keep, you know, it's not good me knocking the ball up to you, Dom, knowing that 9 times out of 10, Ian's going to come over the top and beat you. Well, because he's done it for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
And there's no one close to me as well, so we've got to get close.
Second half, I need to think, right, if I'm over Patterson, I'm going to say to the lads, listen, I just can't get above this kid, so I'm going to play off to the side of him. I'm going to stand to the side of him. And every time you look at me, I'm going to be in behind, coming short to go in behind, or coming in behind to come short. But just whichever my first movement is, play the second one.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, understand that. If you see me drop my shoulder to go behind him, I'm coming short and vice versa. So just change the pattern, change the flow, or change the personnel. And go with a Decker Dover who's going to just be in and say, right, we're just going to play down the channels then.
But, and I know Neil Warnock will have his reasons for this, but I wrote a piece this morning reflecting on the team selection. His selection for the away games at Everton and West Ham, for me, are a little too compact, a little bit too negative, I would say.
Right, in what sense? Can you
pack in the
bit more definitive?
They're packing the midfield, so there's Rowles, Arta and Gunnarsson.
Mm.
Whereas we've discussed on this podcast before, I think you only need two of them,
mm-hmm.
and then Camarasso in a more central position.
Mm.
And Camarasso's been a bit wasted out on the right.
Mm.
And I think it's quite harsh on Kadeem Harris, actually, to have dropped him for the last couple of games.
I think even though Murphy has scored a couple of goals, for me, when Kadeem has got into the team, he's probably showed the most intent and purpose. His first game, he was a bit wary after 10 minutes, 15 minutes, but I think we equalised and then he got into the game. And all he does, I love him because he's got that bit of aggression in him. And he doesn't mind if you beat him, but he is looking to get in behind you every time, or he's looking to get at you every time, or almost every time. Which for a winger, that is your bread and butter. That's your job. Get in and produce chances, score goals.
And you mentioned Decker Dover-Reed wasn't seen at all against West Ham.
Mm.
You know, it's £10 million Cardiff spent. I don't know if you've got the thoughts on this as well, Ian. Are they going to find a way of getting him into that team?
Yeah, where do you put him? But that's the same old question. Do you play him as a...
You talk about what Blakey's talking about, getting someone close to Patterson, or maybe Warnock feels that leaves his midfield exposed. I don't know.
Well, but the game he won, he played him as a 10.
I know.
Spoken about him because he will do a shift defensively, and he did a great shift defensively, scored a brilliant goal. I mean, I haven't seen him since.
I think Cardiff's two best performances of this season, in my opinion, at home to Fulham, actually at home to Arsenal, from an attacking point of view. I think both.
And that Fulham one, I think, was Decker Dover-Reed's best performance individually as well, I think. But go back to the opening day. Obviously, Zahor was a surprise omission. He was injured in the week, and Reed played up top on his own, and he just didn't get a look in. Through no fault of his own, they were playing quite direct, and he was just totally out-muscled and bullied, and they didn't go in behind, which would have suited him as well. So in that sense, you do feel you probably would have to play him as a 10, but then who's he behind?
So you can play Patterson. You can play him as a 9, right? But the problem with and you've just touched on it there, but haven't realised, when he plays as a 9, like against Bournemouth, right, because there was no ball retention, okay, so if you're putting the ball down the channel from within your final third, so say 10 yards outside your 18-yard box, it's so easy for a defender to read. The line of the defender is always 3 or 4 yards off you. The centre-back stood in the space. If not, the right-back is stood in the space, or left-back, either
or. So you're covered either way.
So you're covered either way. So what it becomes is a ball that's down the channel, and you run as a centre-forward behind just to put pressure on, hoping to get a corner or a free kick or a throw-in. Right? Whereas if you retain the ball and move up into the mid-third over around the halfway line, what happens then is me as a centre-forward, as soon as the ball's transferred from, say, Dominic's the right-back into you, central midfield, you and I know, right, depending on that ball, how it's rolling, I know you don't have to take a touch. And you will see out of the corner of your peripheral, he's already going. Right? That is how you see, sometimes you think, it's easy to get in behind the defence, but if you notice, what happens is it's very difficult from the deep position, unless someone's switched off or is not concentrating and someone's wandered off them and they're in.
And but I think that deep position, like you said, Cardiff generally do start from.
That's where they start from, but they're not able to get the strikers in like Reed because they're too deep. Mm. And at the Premier League, the defenders are better, so they're already stood in the position, the right position, 99.9 times out of 100. So, you know, Cardiff, that's why when they started to retain the ball better and play a bit more football, I thought, right, yeah, strikers now, it doesn't matter about size. If you're getting up to the halfway line and you've made a few passes, me as a striker, it doesn't matter if I'm tall, short, quick.
Yeah,
you know, I can make the movements off the patterns we're playing. Ian knows my runs, Dominic knows my runs. We all, like in training, we've been doing it. We've got sort of a sixth sense going on. So, but without that ball, you're just kicking it away, basically, for them to bring it back to you.
And we did actually see that in the end with the goal for Callum Patterson, the equaliser against Brighton, wasn't it? To make it 1-1, obviously, with the way they passed through the middle and ended up getting across into the box. We have seen it.
They can definitely do it. I thought there's a couple of passages of play against West Ham I go back to that I thought, blimey, this is proper stuff. You know, Gunnarsson was actually at the heart of it. So anyone that thinks that he's just a sort of an enforcer in that midfield position, I think it's been proven wrong. I think he's probably been arguably the best player this season.
We've always said, I wouldn't put him there. I would say probably
since he came back,
Manga.
Like
I'd say Manga's Manga. Probably been our best player this season.
Yeah.
With Etheridge, Bamba, Gunnarsson's up there definitely. But I've always said, Dom, people underrate him and think he's just an enforcer. He's not. He's got a very good passing range, very, very good passing range, and he can play at any level. That's what I love him. He doesn't look out of place, like Iceland, England. You know, when they play in the Euros,
yeah,
out of place. World Cup doesn't look out of place. He's actually very important and a very important part of the Icelandic team. So, you know, he's not someone who you say, right, we need another holding midfielder. You've got a very good holding midfielder. You know, so that slots in nice. You can put someone alongside him or one in front of him or two in front of him. It's up to you. But, I agree. I think he's not given the credit he deserves often.
And just to go back to the Wolves game, Cardiff obviously fielded a completely different system in that game.
Mm.
Warnock admitted it was a big risk playing, I think, Camarasa and Hoylett as the wing-backs, which you maybe wouldn't repeat that again. But is that system a way of maybe getting Reed into the team, like we said, and a way of still playing with three in midfield?
I think it is, but you can't play Camarasa in there, because Camarasa was just making up for
the
central midfielders.
You'd play him as one of the...
Well, you play him as the 10. You know, the problem is you can't play Camarasa, because if you watch the game, he was part of the reason why we lost our shape and couldn't keep the ball.
Well,
he's played right wing, and we know it's not his best position, but in that system as a wing back, he drifted inside so many times, which is natural. You go in to get the ball, and I was saying there's already three central midfielders, So when the ball would come to Bamba and he's looking for the outlet of Camarasa, Camarasa was often inside, you know, in over on just central, just right of centre. And
what you're saying makes sense, though, because Camarasa is so much better with the ball than without the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we all know that. He's brilliant with the ball.
But he has to be put somewhere where that's utilised rather than...
Yeah,
Because Neil Warnock likes his wingers to do a lot of work up and down without
shift,
the ball.
Shift. So. Most and that's why I was surprised that Kadeem doesn't, because what Kadeem will do on top of everything else is put a shift in.
Mm.
So they've just got to find... I think they still yet to find a balance. Excuse me. And at times where they've won games, like... I thought after Fulham, maybe Reid would stay in the team for a bit. A few good performances from Harris. I thought, right, he's in.
After Brighton, I thought he'd definitely be in for the next
year. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, they've not quite, for whatever reason, they're not sticking to, you know, the same 11. And I understand it doesn't go that way these days. You tend to rotate your team and rotate your squad, but at the moment, I would just be trying to focus on, you know, getting a solid 12 or 13 that I am playing then, that get used to playing together and form some patterns, because it seems they get a result, team might change, personnel might change, shape might change, and then it's almost start again for them at the moment. I just don't think they're adverse to some other teams of being able to switch personnel and system.
Yeah, square pegs in round holes is what a lot of people are saying on social media.
It's difficult because you need to do it. You know, I've said on the programme many times, they need to be able to go to a back three, they need to go to a back four, they need to have, you know, three central midfielders, they need to play two holders, one ahead, vice versa, one holding, two ahead. So they need to be able to develop these systems of play. But when you do, you've got to be able to retain the ball. It's no good switching your system if it doesn't improve your possession of the ball.
Right, well, let's take a quick break then and we'll have a debate.
You're listening to Blakey's Boot Room from Wales Online.
So welcome back, and welcome back to the podcast to Paul Abbandonato, who has just joined us, obviously looking in and feeling a little bit envious that he wasn't involved.
Ghosted in, like the ghost of Christmas past.
He's the Josh Murphy of the podcast, brought on late on to try and make an impact. Paul, go on then, give us your thoughts on the West Ham game, and then we'll get on to our debate.
I love your ratings, Dom.
Well, I gave my favourite Joe Rouse a 3 out of 10.
Love your ratings. Okay. So that's nice to do a set of ratings.
I'm
really
afraid
extremes,
I had to.
You know? First half was fine. I'm sure you've said all this already. First half was fine. Second half was I just didn't see that capitulation coming.
Fair enough. Let's move on. Yeah, we agree.
We didn't give him a chance to say about the Wolves game. What do you think of the Wolves game?
That was a wonderful evening.
Right. Yeah. Hey, there's the chalk and cheese.
Never say that he doesn't sway with it, which way the result goes.
Wonderful evening. All I would say about West Ham is, and I'm sure you've touched on this, but I'm going to make the point as well. Why are Cardiff playing four centre midfielders in the same team?
I just made that point, haven't I?
You know, if you're playing 4-3-2-1, 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call the modern system, the fluid system, 4-5-1, 4-3-3, you play four defenders, you play three centre mids with one slightly further forward, in Carter's case it needs to be Camarasa, two wide men and a striker. What you don't do is weaken one of the wide positions by putting Camarasa there. However good a player he is, doesn't have the natural pace for a winger.
And yeah, we just said he just went inside all day.
Camarasa not being where he should be in the centre.
Killed Bruno.
Weakens that position.
Killed Bruno Manga.
So
many times the ball was looking just to slot out to the wing back and Camarasa was inside.
I was shuddering watching Felipe Anderson go up against Manga. It wasn't really fair because he's not a right back. You need a great right back if you're going to go against Felipe Anderson.
Yeah, but
he did all right.
When Costa would switch.
Yeah.
I thought right from the get-go in Wolves, I thought Costa tried to run him, and Bruno just stuck pace with him, done something, and he come out with the ball as well. And I would say almost every duel between him, those two,
it's like you've got a well-trained artist, and he's working on a building site. He's not been allowed to do what he's best at doing.
The point I want to make about the midfield is that this is not a personal thing. I think it's really important to stress that. It's about the blend and balance of the team.
Mm.
and hopefully that blend and balance will be corrected for what's an absolute must-win game against Southampton this week.
Well, we will come to that. Let's first of all talk about the Cardiff City defence, because Neil Warnock made some interesting comments after the West Ham game when asked whether he might pursue defensive recruits in January as well. Obviously, he's talked about needing a striker and a defensive midfielder as well, but he pretty much said he'd be happy if he didn't get another defender. Which surprised me, given the nature of Cardiff's defensive performance at West Ham, Nathan.
Mm.
And we've talked about it time and time again, the need for a proper right back.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've spoken to him at times, and he has mentioned to me that, you know, a right back is something they're looking for. So, I don't know. Maybe he thought you meant the central defender. I don't know, but he has expressed to me on numerous occasions. They know, and it's no. Nothing against Bruno. I think Bruno's, like I said, probably player of the year for me up to this point. Playing out of position, that is, you know, I salute him massively. So, you know, I would shift Bruno inside, as I've said before, alongside Bamba. And I would go and get a proper right back who can defend and get forward, because attacking is what's the really name of the game, what they're missing in that position. Defensively, that's why Bruno does a great job defensively. But going forward, naturally, that's not his game. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And even worse, when you consider like someone against Wolves, you've got Camarasa, who's naturally a central midfielder, who keeps drifting inside. So when Bruno has the ball, he's got very little option but to play up the Patterson, who's getting dominated by Bowley, so you don't retain the ball. Hence why Wolves were... Wolves were more complacent. They felt like they were going to score the second goal at some point, and their counter-attack was really poor, decision-making poor. But once Cardiff got the equaliser, that was it, one winner.
And why do you think Ian Warnock is loath to criticise his defence? I mean, if there was a chance to do it, I would say it was after we'd spoke about the mix-up between Bennett and Morrison.
Mm.
The marking from a set piece again was found wanting. He didn't choose to criticise them again.
Yeah, I mean, it's the defence that got them up, so he's obviously sticking by them, and credit to him for that. But privately, he'll obviously be having his words as well. Let's obviously not forget that. But, you know, like you say, we've touched on Manga already, and he's playing in that role which isn't his best, and he's probably been, it's probably fair to say he's been the best defender this season, I think, even in a position that's not naturally his best, and he hasn't had that outlet ahead of him on the right wing either, so he's been really handicapped, and he's still done a very good job in a position
Warnock
that's not his best either.
With the defense as well, so
he does, but that's the question then. So if they do get a full-back in, what does it mean for Manga? Does he replace Bamba or Morrison in the centre back, so is that the end for him?
Well, Nathan would say that he came in for Morrison, I think, wouldn't you? But
I'd change
that's a
it
tough
for Morrison,
call. That's a tough
yeah.
call.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole new debate entirely. But then, if you're sticking with the rest of the defence, then you know if he does bring in another right back, that if Warnock does stick with Bamba and Morrison, then probably the best defender gets left out. So
that's what you have to do, isn't it? Really, I mean, we talk about Joe Riles, and maybe he needs to be left out now, and despite being fantastic this season.
That did those words just come from his mouth, boy?
Blakey, I rated him 3 out of 10 against West Ham.
Can you believe what I just heard?
I'm sorry, Joe, it's not personal, but 3 out of 10 was deserved.
Okay.
And that maybe needs to happen with either Morrison or Bamba, as tough as that may be. Paul won't countenance leaving Bamba out, I know, because he's been on the boot room.
No. I think we got more credibility than that. In terms of the first goal the other night, I wasn't too perturbed about that, to be honest. So that was a lack of communication between Morrison and Bennett. That can be resolved. What worried me is that they've conceded yet another goal from a set piece, and instead of being, you know, we thought Cardiff coming out, they would be the set piece kings.
No, I didn't.
No, I know you didn't. But that was something that
you're
was,
up against a different, totally different.
But it was being
level said, of player.
Clearly, it's been their strength.
Yeah, but this
years.
Is what I was saying in the from the get go, Paul. Right. So the problem for me. Before, people were saying, oh, set pieces. You can't become a team reliant upon set pieces, right? You rely on possession of football, right? Or counter-attacking football. That is your reliance. That is the, because you might play in a game where you only get 2 or 3 set pieces. And they might be not corners, they might be deep free kicks or whatever. So when you're going up a level to a Premier League where the overwhelming majority of teams are about ball retention, and you're saying at the beginning of the season, we're going to give you that ball and we're going to sit back and we're going to let you attack us, and then what we'll do is rely on our set pieces. Well, hey ho, you're only getting 30% of the ball, and in the 30% of the ball, you only, instead of like last year getting 15-20 corners, you are now only getting 3 or 4. So straight away your average, your ratios are way down. So if Morrison doesn't get on, or Bama doesn't get on the end of a set piece of those 3 or 4 attempts, whereas last year you had another 8 attempts, this year you haven't. So straight away your whole ethos of what you're trying to build on is probably cut by more than a half.
Bang on.
Do you know what I mean?
Maybe that works in reverse then, in terms of the opposition actually have a lot more set pieces, and so maybe we're being a little bit unfair saying Cardiff conceding too many because they're actually defending a lot.
Yeah, I don't.
That's a product of their style of play.
It was mentioned against Wolves, wasn't it? I think Gary Neville said to Sean Morrison about, Carragher conceded another goal from a set piece.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I look and I just think, well, it's not that they're conceding. You might say they've conceded a lot of goals from set pieces, but it's because the opposition is getting the ball a lot more than Cardiff. If you look at the percentage stats, usually, it's like Cardiff are between 32 and 37% possession. They hardly ever, there's probably 3 or 4 games after the Arsenal game where they got into the 40s, low 40s. But they hardly ever even close on ball retention. It's huge, and we thought that was changing, and it hasn't. It's kind of reverted.
To counter that, Blake, you probably look at a team like Burnley last season.
Mm.
They were averaging 30% possession most games, I think.
But they had
didn't concede any goals.
Yeah, well, there's a difference there because you've got a platform that you're playing off. So you're playing up to a Volks, or you're playing up to what's the other lad's name? And you've got a situation where when you're counter-attacked, you're able to complete your counter-attack, usually with a shot or a goal or something like that, because you've got someone who's playing off and giving you that retention of ball when you need it. It's as simple as that. But Cardiff, without that ball retention, like I mentioned, it's all interlinked on. Without someone to hold that ball up, and when we do have it, being able to counter-attack off a platform, then you're going to struggle.
No respite, is there?
Absolutely not. That's why I'm maybe Neil Warnock is loath to go against his defenders, because he understands that.
It all goes back to that question of a striker, and why we keep talking about certain Mr. Ken Zahor and why he's not firing. Paul, just as a side note, what did you make of Warnock's latest comments about Zahor, which... frankly, seem to have
I haven't seen him.
Put him virtually on the verge of an exit. What did he say?
Well, it was basically...
Are you still getting over it? Come on, man. I don't like seeing my friends like that. Come on, you okay?
Well, it was some melancholy tones to play. Go on, repeat it.
Go on.
I can't remember it word for word, but it was along the lines of, I cannot do any more other than cooking his dinner, wasn't it?
Well, no, he said something like, more recently something like that. And someone said, are you frustrated with Ken Zahor, Neil?
And he
said, I think you're being really kind to really say you're frustrated. Yeah. And he couldn't honestly say how he feels at the moment about Zahor.
He said he had so much talent in those legs, and he's just frustrated. He said, there's nothing more he can do.
But he also said that with his talent, I think he used the words, he should be tearing up this division. Was it about the Premier League here, Blakey? Now, that may be an exaggeration from Warnock, but that's what he said. So there's always that rider, and that's what creates frustration. We haven't got to talk about Zahor again, have we?
No, we haven't, but I just thought his latest comments were...
He's probably saying it. See, what you've got to understand is the mind game. So the manager, that's why I say he's been fantastic at times, because it's easy for him to say... Trust me, it's easy for him to go public and say, you know, Ken's not giving us nothing. It's been a waste of time this season, right? Which is what everyone is witnessing, right? Okay, then he's saying, oh, he got a little injury, he's looking after him that way, blah, 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 blah. But even that comment, saying what he's saying there, he's still not sliced and diced him. He's still saying to you, you can rip the league up if you get the bit between your teeth.
I think that's because
he's still giving him. He's still... I think even... To be honest with you, mate, if they get a striker or they don't. Managers hate, see, it's like money going to waste, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like someone giving you a pile of money and then burning it. You know, it's not doing anything for you. You want it to work for you. You know what I mean? And he knows Kenneth has the ability to work for him and his team, and is and could be an important part of that. So,
when does the light bulb moment come?
It's probably coming past for Neil. Neil's that experience. He'll know. Like, if I had this time again, I probably would have sold him when people were asking 20 million for him. But those are the breaks. Sometimes you get them right. Sometimes you get them wrong. Simple.
It's funny how things change in football. We were batting away those bids and saying, "Oh, Cardiff won't sell them, no matter what the price." And if only he could turn back time.
He was absolutely indispensable. It was the first day of last season.
Yeah.
It was the first day, and the bid had come in from Brighton. It was a Saturday morning.
It wasn't the first day. It was about third week, as I was on the way to Wolves when it happened.
So maybe it was the first. I was doing Swansea Man United that day. That was probably the first day of the Premier League that season.
Yeah, I think it was third week.
Sorry about the language,
but it was. I remember when it came out on the Saturday morning, and yeah, I was devastated because I thought selling your best player, which is what he was at the time. Selling your best player, that was a statement of we're not going up. Whereas keeping your best player, which is what he was at the time, was a statement of we are going to give this a real go this season. And it was a big call for that money to be turned down by Cardiff. A huge call. But they turned it down for not just football reasons, but other reasons as well.
Stability.
Yeah, the fact that they were building the club together. It seems an eternity ago, but it was only the start of last season. And and of course he followed that by tearing up the championship against John Terry and James Chester and Leeds. Fantastic performance.
Well, last season?
Yeah, but how?
I wouldn't go that far, Paul. He said he had a half-decent season.
He had injuries as well.
No, but this is what I'm saying. He started the season like that. Yeah?
Okay.
He started it like that. And then how it's changed in the intervening 12 months? Mm. 13 months?
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
It's like a moment of reflection there for all of us. Right, let's
take, can I get a moment of silence?
Let's take another short break and then we'll go into some questions for Nathan.
Subscribe to The Boot Room on iTunes or listen on walesonline.co.uk.
So thick and fast here, Nathan. Lots of have come in. Obviously, two games for people to reflect on.
Here we go. Come on, then.
This is a good one from Ed Rhodes, joining on what we just said.
All right, Ed.
He says, 8 seasons since Cardiff had a top goal scorer with more than 20 goals.
No, I left in 19.
he says, is there something in the water just beyond this season why Cardiff can't have a 20-plus goal striker?
I really can't answer that question, mate. There's too many conflicting issues. We've just mentioned Kenneth Zahor. We've also mentioned someone like Reid, who's not playing and then played well and then gone back out again. And
Bobby Reid scored 20 goals last season.
Yeah,
it's
the fact they're in the Premier League, not the Championship. You know, it's the fact that you don't keep ball retention enough. It's the fact that we only play one way, really and truly. So if you're playing like with a Reid or someone like who's smaller, it's going to be difficult, hence why Patterson has become the number one striker. So there's all different reasons and circumstances why. So that's, I can't answer that, I'm afraid.
It's a brilliant question, though, Blakey, because, you know, I've just heard that for the first time. Just thinking about it now, you know, even when Cardiff went up under Malky,
yeah,
I think Helgeson was a top scorer.
Yeah, with about 12.
You know, it wasn't 30. Many, I think it was less than that.
Yeah.
You know, then Kenwyn Jones and Alan Rafondra came to the club, and you thought they would tear up this division, and a lot of people did.
I think the problem is, Paul, those players come when the club was in turmoil. If I'm totally honest, and Cardiff fans might shoot me down for saying, you ain't gonna get a 20-goaler striker playing the way we play.
What are we going Michael Chopper is the last one.
Well, the last person to get 20 goals was a midfielder. That was Peter Whittaker.
Yeah.
And when was that?
That was the one season that they went up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or the season before they went up. But, you know.
So who was the last striker to get 20 then?
Probably Ernie.
It might be Chopper or Bothroyd.
Yeah, one of those two. The point is, Paul, if you got the way the game has, it's changed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care what anyone says. There's far more emphasis on ball retention. 10 years ago, you weren't asking keepers to spread the ball, keep the ball, blah, blah, blah. You weren't saying the centre-halves split. Yeah, that was like alien, you know, keep the ball, you know, defend it, or get up in a line, kick the ball long, we play from there. That was how football was in the UK, second balls. Now it's much more ball retention and winning second balls if you can, blah, 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 blah. Now keepers have to play, centre-backs have to play. Full-backs are now like wingers or wing-backs. They have to get forward, they have to get crosses, they have to get goals. So the game has changed, and I don't think under Neil, whilst I think he's been fantastic, getting promotion, what have you, I think the way Cardiff play, you're not going to get a 20-goal striker. It's going to be very, very difficult for a team, because what you get goals by the end, usually, of patterns of play, you know, understanding, blah, 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 blah. At the moment, you've not got a striker that you can say, yes, he's our number one striker, and he is an out-and-out striker, right? You don't retain the ball long enough, often enough, and you're not getting as many set pieces as you got before. So if you're expecting someone, when we couldn't get strikers into double figures last season, playing that way, to come in the Premier League and get double figures, mate, good luck with that.
Who asked the question, Tom?
I've gone off here now.
Well,
it's a great question.
It was a fantastic question, Ed Rhodes.
But Ed, there's so many connotations to it. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's a brilliant question, Ed, because Cardiff fans would be coveting a 20-goal.
They love strikers, man.
Absolutely coveting that.
They love them.
Figure to get behind now.
Chris Pike.
Is a suggestion.
Carl Bales.
We're talking about
Gilligan.
Yeah.
Talk about strikers. Dave Roberts has got a good suggestion for you. Blake,
who's got a good suggestion? What's his name?
Dave Roberts.
All right, Dave.
He says Peter Crouch would be a thought. Would suit the route one, or to bring off the bench. Plus, he's a character that Cardiff fans would take to. He ticks those boxes that we've been talking about.
I'm sorry, Dave. It's not about characters who are, you know, famous off the pitch. We need a player, mate. Yeah, and you need a player with legs, with a character, with determination. Need more. For me, we have to be always thinking, right, progression, development, next season, rest of this season.
But is it about next season, Blake? You mean Cardiff need to do everything they can to do?
It's always, mate. You've got one eye on the future. Can't change yesterday, but you can tomorrow, right? So you always got to have one eye on the future, mate, and the other eye on the here and now. So for me, if you're looking to progress and develop, I think most people would accept we are, over time, going to have to change the way we are playing. You're not gonna go back down to the championship and win the championship again or get promoted out of the championship. It was difficult last time. You know, this time, there are more and more people who will be ready for that surprise sort of Neil Warnock style of play. You know, and there were teams last year who worked us out pretty quickly and just done us with sort of rotation and stuff. So
you look at how you watch a bit of the Championship, Mitch, don't you? You look at how competitive that is at the top there with Norwich, West Brom, Aston Villa 1-3-0 at Middlesbrough, I think I'm right in saying.
Leeds,
Leeds United, you know, Derby County, Stoke have suddenly started to charge up the table as a squad of their Villa county should.
Yeah,
this is a highly competitive,
and they're all playing
good football.
Right, that's the point I'm trying
and
to
you
get
look
to.
At Fulham last year, you know, they were 16th. This time last year, around December, and they ended up
charged.
They went 23 games unbeaten, something like that.
And it was only the last day of the season when they lost to Birmingham. Mm. So, you know, that's the nature of that league. But on that subject that we were briefly talking about with the goal situation, just thinking then, how many clubs have a 20 goal season striker in the Premier League, with the exception of possibly Jamie Vardy at Leicester, outside the top four or top five, six teams?
Not many.
Who realistically has had over the last few years?
Dom's hero for a start. Harry
well,
Kane.
Outside of there, who realistically is going to have them?
Well, what you got now is you've got
15.
You've got 12 to 15. If you've got a striker, get you 12 to 15 goals. 15 is huge. Anything over 15 is massive, right?
Yeah.
So,
it's a good point, Mitch.
But Murray, someone like Murray at Brighton, he's always going to get 12-15 yeah. goals a season.
Double figures at least, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You feel Mitrovic well, don't you?
You do. Yeah. He'll end up in 12-15 goals. Mm. So, I mean, for us, okay, the 20 goal a season thing is probably a thing of the past also, but you still need to be looking at 15 goals from one player, and namely a striker.
Yeah,
because the difference is now wingers got involved before and got goals, but now you tend to play one striker with two wide men, and all three of those are expected to be in double figures.
Yeah.
Talking of strikers, we got this message from Leighton Cosler, who's
all right, late.
Sending this all the way from Perth, Australia.
G'day, mate. Roy Leighton fella, how are you doing, mate?
He said Australia, Blakey, not South Africa.
I don't know where that is, mate.
South Africa is different, my friend.
I've got no idea where that accent is.
How many accents do you want?
Leighton is putting you on the spot, Nathan. He says, okay, we need a striker. Who would Nathan go out and buy?
Wow.
Oh, mate.
Good question.
Best
I'll be honest with you. It's difficult for reasons that, you know, I always answer the straight question. I can't answer that because dealing with the agency myself, I'm already speaking about strikers and what have you, so I can't divulge that.
So you go out and buy a young Nathan Blake, is what you're
saying? I'd go and buy you, Dom. That's who I'd buy.
I don't think that'd be a good move for anyone concerned, to be honest. And Ian,
so sorry, mate. I don't mean to avoid the question, but I can't really answer it. So
that's absolutely.
Well, how much money should they be spending then? Can you give some guide on that?
They can go either way. They can go and spend 20 million on a striker and it fail. They can spend 2 million on a striker and it fail. I think what you've got to, how you work it out is making sure that the person has certain attributes that fit to what the philosophy is you're playing to. It's as simple as that. And as high a quality of player you can get for your money. So, you know, if you've got an international player that you can pick up, I doubt you're getting for less than 10 million quid. But if they're there, go and get them. But not just an international of, like someone who's ranked 90th in the world. It's got to be a decent, you know, level of striker. But this is a difficult one for me to answer.
Think Lukaku will come to Cardiff, Dom?
Next question.
You could do it. Do you know what you could do it? Do you know you could do it? Someone who would be perfect now, probably if they were 4 or 5 years younger, was someone like a Kenwyn Jones. He would be, because he's not intimidated by the league. He's always played well in this league. He was athletic, great in the air, and, you know, very dominant against centre-halves. He is someone that, the way Cardiff play now, he would be perfect. But he's a lot older than what he was last time he was here, so I'm not saying him, but I'm saying someone of that stature.
That's the second time today we wanted to get in the time machine and gone back and chase things. Following on from what we discussed before, this is a really interesting angle that Joseph Turner's taken. He says,
"Hi, Joe.
Why isn't Warnock playing Camaras in the middle? Why is he choosing to play it?
I can't tell you that. I haven't got a clue. I think what he's saying is he's probably looking at Camaras's ability and saying we can't do without it. But then we need, because Camaras, in fairness, he's not going to be. I remember against Liverpool, you know, he should have smashed someone on the edge of the box and he kind of dangled the leg. He's not going to go in and smash people like a Gunnarsson or a Rowles. So I think he needs those dogs of war in that central position. But then you need that creativity ahead of them, for me. And I think he's thinking, if I get Arthur, I need to play him. Gunnarsson, I need to play him. Rowles, need to play him. I need those three workers, tacklers, blah, 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 blah. So it only gives me one option, really, to put Camaras on the right-hand side. Then you've got a choice. Do you play Kadim? Do you play Murphy? Do you play Hoylett? Or do you play Camaras?
It's almost worth not playing Camaras if you want. If you don't want to play him in the middle.
Well, what he does, when he picks up the ball, he gets the crowd like off his seat often. He'll do a lovely little bit of skill or something like that.
He's good, Nathan.
Yeah, he's a very good player. But personally, I would go with, at this moment in time, I would go with Murphy and Kadim and have Camaras as my number 10 with Gunnarsson and Arda sat behind him and ahead of him. Patterson.
We're all crying out for that, but it seems to be reluctant. Warnock seems to be reluctant to do it.
I can't answer that. he's his own man and he knows the game.
You're taking on Paul's mantra of answering questions today. A little bit cagey than normal. All right, let's take a little break then. We'll look back at your predictions from last week and we'll look ahead to Southampton, who've got a new manager whose name I can't pronounce.
You can't say that.
Got a question for Blakey? Tweet us at Cardiff City Live.
Ian, who's the new Southampton manager?
Right, let me get the Google out.
Hasenhüttl?
Hasenhüttl, yeah.
Hasenhüttl.
First Austrian manager in the Premier League, apparently.
Come from RB Leipzig.
Had a decent season with them, got him promoted. Very good in their first season.
Do we feel a new manager bounce?
Well, put it this way, I do, yeah.
Yes.
Can't get any worse, put it like that, for Southampton.
I sort of felt when the news and... When Southampton drew with Man United, I'm a Man United fan, but I was
half of me thought it was
all right because Mark Hughes would stay in the job and Cardiff might get
perfect result for Cardiff. That was, I thought, and then they got rid of him anyway.
So
cheers, Sparky.
Got to say, Blakey, I know you played for him, but just diversifying very quickly. Mm. There's a bit of a myth about Mark Hughes, you know, right? I felt there was when he was Wales manager, right? That people like Robbie Savage and players who play for him, and you're probably one of them as well, quite rightly point out that he had that golden year in 2002 when we beat Italy, Germany, drew with Argentina.
Yeah, but he came
within, you know, 74,000.
He made a mistake against Russia at home.
Yeah, came within a game of Euro 2004. Mm. But before that, Wales went on a record run of 14 games without a win under Sparky. And after that Russia game you talk about, Wales went on a record run of 10 competitive games without a win. And and he left an Asian squad behind. And I don't know. He quite obviously has got ability. He's got two good deputies, in my view, in Eddie Nzvicky.
I think there lies his problem.
But you know,
I think it's dated.
Yeah, maybe that's the issue. I don't know. It's.
I always take my lead off in my era, who was the best, and Fergie was by far the best. Right, and yes, he had spending power up and above most other clubs, but still, you have to spend wisely, as we're seeing with Man United now. You can spend and it can all go pear-shaped, right? So you have to spend wisely. And Fergie was renowned for every 2 or 3 years, 3 or 4 years max, he'd change the backroom staff or change one or two of his backroom staff. And you look at like Kuros, McLaren, different people, Phelan he had in there. And for me, I look at Sparky and I've said it for about the last 6 months, he should change one or both of Mark Bone and Eddie Nedvesky, because whatever they're doing, it isn't having the same impact as when they first come into the game. When he first come into the game, the professional, after international football, what they done was very effective, but it's not. It doesn't last. That's the other thing either. It's not like a lasting legacy, which then you build upon and then go to the next level. It seems to be, well, unfortunately, Sparky seems to have become one of these managers who gets picked up when you're in trouble.
What do you think of Mark Hughes, Mesh? I'm interested as an outsider's view.
Yeah, but bear in mind the period you're talking about. I was sort of still in secondary school, quite young, so I was watching the team as a fan back then, not a journalist. But you do look at, I think that's an interesting point, because you look at Neil Warnock now with Kevin Blackwell, Ronnie Jepson, you know, his tried and trusted lieutenants, and a lot of people will have it at various clubs as well. But it does come back to that point that Nathan said, the Premier League it's not what it was even 10 years ago, probably. Mm. It's a different animal these days, and it just hasn't evolved in the last, in that time period anyway, probably after Wales, talking was it 04, so by the time that he'd gone, yes, yeah, it's over a decade now, comfortably. And has he personally evolved with his backroom staff? The job at Southampton keeping them up.
He has the same backroom staff, and Blakey will testify to this, both Mark Bowen and Eddie Nzvicky, both of whom I know quite well.
Yeah.
Damn good coaches. I was loving the fact that they had that golden year for Wales in 2002-03. It was wonderful.
Like Nathan said about Ferguson, changed his assistant after every few years, changed his team, kept it fresh. Even I think
players talk. See, Paul, the thing is, like, if you've been at as many clubs as they've been at, and then you hear he's coming to my club, first thing you do is get on the phone with your mate who was at the club he left a year ago, and say, what was he like? Oh, probably your mate has already told you while he was there, complaining about this and that and this, because players always moan. That's just what we do. So all the naughties, all the stuff that you don't want, you're then going into the dressing room and saying, oh yeah, you know, I heard from a mate at Stoke that they do this, and I heard from a mate at QPR that they do that. Bang, you start training, they're still doing the same thing. First thing you do is, mate, they were doing this back in 2008. Move on. Turn the page, is the old saying they say in football. Turn the page, mate.
See, I guess
so they might have evolved. I'm saying, I don't know. They might have evolved how they train, what they do. But to continually get the same position over probably the last 5 or 6 seasons, when they get a job, they're in, don't seem to be able to win a game, and then they're out within 12 months. I don't know, that doesn't...
I guess the point I'm making is that Sparky will always be a Welsh legend to me, particularly as a player. I'll never forget that. I told him this, shook his hand as he finished against... His last game was against Poland at the Millennium Stadium, and said, you know what, that year, the previous year, was the best year I've had covering Welsh football, which it was at the time. That was obviously eclipsed Euro 2016. But even though he'll always be a Welsh legend to me, I wanted him to remain in charge against Cardiff, because Cardiff would have had a better chance of winning, I feel, with Southampton not having the new manager.
Right, it's just the new manager bounce, isn't it?
I'm perturbed about that.
Mm. Especially the manager of Hasenhüttl's repute. I've seen his CV, even if I can't pronounce his name, and it does look like he, like you say, Blake, he's going to inject them with a bit of energy, pressing, intensity.
I watch his RB Leipzig team when they won the Bundesliga.
Second, didn't they?
They come second. Yeah. They won promotion the season before. And, mate, they're just not a pressing team. I think that's a little unfair. They play some great football as well. You know, when they were up again. What they had was energy levels that people weren't expecting for a team that had just come up. And they were incredible and well set up as well. So I doubt you'd be able to get that much work into them. But the fear is always the fact that if the players at Southampton were hoping Sparky and his team would go, you automatically get a lift, even if he sat in the stands.
You did very, very well in your predictions last week. Seven points, including completely correct score prediction for Cardiff Wolves, 2-1.
Mm.
Correct scores for the Palace, Burnley, Man City, Bournemouth, correct results for them, sorry, and 3 others. You keep getting Man United wrong, but then you keep predicting that they're going to win. Mm. So, more for you.
Yeah. I felt a bit let down because I was rubbish the week before that one night, so I thought I'd really put my head on.
Palace did it for you, so
yeah, I knew they had to come good sooner or later.
that's an impressive sequence of predictions. Basically.
Yeah. Okay. So let's have the pen, Dom.
Sorry, I've
the power of the pen.
What are you going for this week? Blake's predictions.
So the first game is Bournemouth Liverpool. Okay, I'm actually gonna go for a 2-2 draw. Right. Bournemouth, Liverpool.
I read your mind there, Nathan.
You did? Okay. Arsenal, Huddersfield. I'm going to go for a 4-0. Sorry, mate. 4-0 home win against Huddersfield. Burnley, Brighton. I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 away win to Brighton. Man United, Fulham. Okay, I'm going to go for a 2-1 at Old Trafford. West Ham Palace. I'm going to go for a close one again, but I'm just going to go a 1-0 to West Ham. Chelsea Man City. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw there. And then Leicester Spurs. Let's see. I'm gonna go with I'm gonna go for a 2-2 draw.
Goals again this week, Nathan. If you're right.
Newcastle v Wolves. I'm actually gonna go against my old team there. I'm gonna go with a 2-0 win because Wolves attacking wise, they just seem to have gone off the boil. And Everton Watford.
The Marco Silva derby.
I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Everton. That's my predictions.
Excellent.
Oh, Cardiff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say you have to now predict Cardiff.
Cardiff, Southampton.
From a game that we thought at the start of the week was a potential banker for Cardiff, it really isn't anymore. I don't think.
Yeah, no bankers for Cardiff, mate. We ain't there yet. Okay, so I'll go with a 1-1 draw. New manager, Cardiff, on a bit of a roll at home. So,
Paul, we'll come to you next.
Hassan Hüttl has totally changed this, hasn't he? Totally changed it.
But he can't have had that much effect in a few days. That's my logic on this one.
No, but it's the banks of the players. I think they've got decent players at Southampton. They've just been underachieving. One nil Cardiff.
I'm going to say that Hasenhüttl won't have an effect at all, and Cardiff will bounce back and win 2-0.
It's not just the manager coming, it's the manager leaving, mate. So that's sometimes it's not the fact that who's coming in, it's the fact they're so happy that the manager's gone.
But I look at that Southampton defence and I don't think it's any great shakes, no matter who the manager is. That's my logic.
They have got some very good attackers.
They have, yeah. I rate Austin and I rate Ings when he's on form as well. But I'm going to be positive.
Redmond, I think he's a great player on his day. He can tear up any defence.
Ian finishes off.
Yeah, if you ask me on Sunday or Monday, Stonewall, Cardiff win.
Yeah.
But even though there are no bankers in this league, but I just think, was it no wins in the last 12, Southampton? This is perfect time, and I think they're going to do it. So apologies. Yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 Southampton.
That's all right, mate.
It's all right. You won't be invited
on the show again.
I hope I'm wrong, but there we are.
Well, if you're not, it'll be the last time you're on this show.
It's been great having you on the podcast. Well, thank you all for all your contributions today. It's been an interesting addition. Paul, glad you got involved. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, you can listen on Spotify, Wales Online or Acast, and this podcast is sponsored by Giovanni's. Remember to go to social media to ask Nathan a question. We're getting more and more of those every week. From the four of us, not the three of us this week, it's goodbye and thanks for listening.